This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by Elan House of Wellness, the mother-led brand that's dedicated to nurturing, nourishing and empowering new mothers and families. I've eaten my way through so many of their incredibly nourishing dry food packs, like the dark chocolate banana bread, golden kitchery, and blooming bites. And you're in luck, because some of my favourite products are currently 20% off. In my opinion, a better nourished postpartum leads to a better return to paid work and a happier parent all around. So support and nourish yourself today with Elan House of Wellness.
Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work. I am Loz and I am joined by my good friend Chrissy, K-Dog. I don't know any other nicknames we call her really. I think I'm the only one that calls her K-Dog because Lucy has had a really tough week. So we are taking the reins today with some rogue conversation. Chrissy, please feel free to introduce yourself.
I can guarantee you are the only person that calls me K-Dog, otherwise known as Christina or Chrissy. I am a mum of two. I am a hip birthing practitioner and I'm the education manager for The Memo. So, yes, fellow
lots
mother
going on
board.
Yeah, and fellow mother. Love it. Good news story. As always, kicking things off, a story about a boy on a bus has gone viral. The story goes, my daughter started her period on the bus ride home today and a boy a year older than her who doesn't really know her pulled her aside and whispered in her ear that she had a stain on the back of her pants. He gave her his sweater, aka jumper in Australia, to tie around her waist so that she could walk home off the bus. She was embarrassed and originally said, no, it's okay. But the boy insisted and told her, I have sisters, it's all good. Think for a minute about all of the conversations that took place with that boy to make this story happen. Let's parent like his mum. And Chrissy, I actually said this before, like we talked about this story and you're like, interesting comment, parent like his mom. It's like, we should probably be parenting together as like a family unit.
Absolutely. So it'll just be interesting to know, you know, is it education that he's learned in school? Is it conversations he's had with his sisters? Is it his mom? Is it his dad? Like, it would be really interesting to know his point of view, where he's influenced by, and hopefully it's a collective, but yeah, a very interesting one on let's parent like his mum. It kind of just shows you where we're at in society, still putting the onus on mothers to really take that area.
Maybe that wasn't a good news story in hindsight. It seems sweet until you look at the message underneath it.
It's all about education, and having a conversation is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, very so that true. Is a good. That is true. You're right. Today, we are going to go through some of, because it's super chunky, Deloitte's 2024 Women at Work report and go through some of the stats that we found super interesting. Research around supporting your loved one's breastfeeding journey that we're going to pick apart because I think we've got some differing opinions to what the journalist said was a number one thing to support your partner. And Chrissy and I are going to talk about all things birth trauma, which is absolutely in Chrissy's wheelhouse and how much more common it is than many of us think. So to kick things off, Women at Work 2024, a global outlook, representing the views of 5,000 plus women from workplaces across 10 countries, the Women at Work report seeks to understand the lived experience of women at work. No real surprises there. And the ways in which aspects of their lives outside of work can impact these experiences. This is the fourth year that this report has been run. It was actually so meaty that I think we'll have to cover it over two episodes because there was so much to digest. But here's some of the thought-provoking stats I thought we could discuss today. More than one in 10 women think that women's rights have deteriorated in their country in the last year. 14% of women believe that women's rights have deteriorated in their own home country over the last year. And of these, about one in three believe that the right to earn an equal wage has worsened. 15% say this has personally affected them, and 29% believe that the right to live free of violence has deteriorated, with 13% of women saying that this has affected them personally. What do you think about those stats? I was kind of surprised, if I'm honest.
I think it's really sad. And I don't know if it's just like a media thing. Like in the past 12 months, it feels like there is more attention on what's happening in the US, you know, in states like Alabama and Texas, and women's onus over their own bodies, and the whole abortion piece going backwards, and what's happening in Gaza, you know, especially to women and children, and what's happening in Bondi, and what's happening in Australia with domestic violence. I don't know if it a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if it's just brought to light because there's so many conversations around it and that women are feeling different, or if it's more of a systemic problem that it is becoming more of an issue. I don't know. But either way, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's really sad because I think sometimes you see these things where we're progressing, like the gender pay gap. I mean, it's still there, obviously, but it's closing. And then you're seeing way more like progressive conversations happening around women, like from a career perspective or from an aspirations perspective, or even from like a stay-at-home mum perspective, like all those kind of conversations are starting to happen more publicly, which is great. But then to think that a lot of women are like, nah, we're moving backwards. I'm like, God, that's so sad.
It does. It does feel very much like we're moving backwards. And oh God, it's hard. It's really hard to know. I feel like anytime there's that big change and that big shift in community, it's like there's a lot of things need to be dug up and that need to bubble to the surface. So I'm hoping it's one of those things. Well, there's that big change and shift in everyone's mindset. I'd like to think that there's a big shift in people's mindset. It's going to take time. But I feel like when there's any disruption to community, there has to be like that unstable, you know.
There was lots of other points that I found fascinating, but I will say there was a huge chunk in this report around mental health, and the stats were quite interesting because from my perspective, I've seen the importance that workplaces place on mental health increase significantly over the last couple of years, particularly since COVID. Not that every workplace is doing it, but you've now got wellbeing officers. A lot of organizations are offering mental health courses, so you can be a mental health officer. I know that my last organization had that, but this report is saying that there's concerns about adverse career impacts, discrimination or retaliation that stops women from disclosing when taking time off for mental health reasons. So it says among the women who say they're uncomfortable disclosing mental health as a reason for taking time off work, 20% say that they worry that doing so would damage their career progression. Well, 18% say that they don't believe the workplace is an appropriate place to discuss their mental health. I mean, you've got to remember, like, how much time are we spending in the workplace? If you can't actually discuss your mental health in the place that you're spending the most time, where can you discuss it? I find that so strange.
It's a really tricky one because I guess mental health issues are so prevalent, and women, I guess, are much more open to disclosing them than men. So if they do disclose them, it's like, is that another notch in our belt that's going to then deter pretty much male management from offering you positions or putting you forward? So some places don't have a HR department. Some places don't have managers that are super approachable. So that's not surprising to me at all. As someone that's previously struggled with mental health issues, I probably wouldn't be like comfortable discussing them at work.
Would you discuss
like
it with a work bestie though?
I don't know if I would. I would probably, I'm discussing it on a podcast, but it's like I'd probably be more comfortable discussing it with a close friend or a partner versus a work bestie.
Gosh, that's because so interesting.
Like I still feel like at work I want to keep it. I keep those two things a little bit separate, to be honest.
I get what you're saying.
I still feel like there's a line that I'm like, I don't like to blur those two lines too much.
Okay, so most people think like you. It says others worry that they wouldn't get the necessary support at work if they did talk about it. That was 16%. Mm-hmm. That they would face potential discrimination or retaliation, 14%. Or that it could make them vulnerable to being laid off, 12%. Oh, that's so icky. 1 in 10 cite past negative experiences with disclosure of mental health challenges. I also note that a lot of organizations now have, well, not a lot, but I would say larger organizations now have mental health days. In the last two organizations that I've worked at, and I know not every organization is like this, but I do think it means we're making steps in the right direction. They've got mental health or well-being days once a quarter. And if you don't take it, it goes. So it's almost encouraging you to take it.
Yeah, I would say that's the minority of workplaces for sure. I don't think that that would be the standard, you know, go-to.
My thinking around it is it's definitely larger organisations because they've got the funds for people not to be at work for that day. But my thinking around it is that if larger, more progressive organisations are setting the tone, then surely in years to come, I don't know if there'd be government support or if smaller organisations would offer that as benefits. Because as we're seeing now, people aren't motivated purely by money. They're motivated by benefits and flexibility and, of course, money coming up. But I wonder if that's a benefit that smaller organisations would start to, like, particularly for new mums coming back to work. Far out, it'd be bloody nice to have a mental health day.
If you think about it, I've had three miscarriages. Two of those have actually been at work, and I didn't actually leave work on those days because I didn't want to take the time away from my sick leave that I would probably need to have available as the primary caregiver for my child.
Yes.
Because when my child first started daycare and I went back to the office, I was like, I really need these days and I'm going to need them because, you know, the first 3 to 6 months, they're horrendously sick all the time. So I was like, I don't want to churn through that and then have to take leave without pay. So I'm just going to, like, suck it up and stay here. And really, like, that would be a really good reason as to not be there, you know? So it's a shame that we have to think like that. It's not ideal.
The other thing that relates to the topic of exactly what you just said is menstrual disorders, menopause, and fertility challenges are impacting women, yet many feel unable to take time off or seek support. More than a quarter of women experience challenges relating to periods, menopause, or fertility. So exactly what you just said, I would say miscarriage and fertility are very closely aligned. 27% of women say that they experience health challenges relating to menstruation, such as endometriosis, menopause, or fertility, such as miscarriage or high-risk pregnancy. About 4 in 10 women experience high levels of pain with menstruation and don't take the time off and instead work through it. And about 40% of women who report experiencing high levels of pain or discomfort due to menopause, menstruation, or fertility issues say that they work through it, compared to just 20% in 2023. That's wild. It's exactly what you said. So what we're actually seeing is a doubling in the percentage of women who are just working through things. I would have thought it would have gone more the other way.
Well, I guess if you think about it, so maybe it's the fact that a lot of people have been called back into the office. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But, you know, in the past 12 months, a lot of people that were working from home have been called back into the office. And so maybe there is that lack of flexibility from working from home. So where you might be more comfortable or have access to other things that will make you more comfortable, you know, and it's like if you are working those rigid hours between 9 to 5, maybe before you might have been able to take an hour to go and have a shower or have a lie down or take some pillows or just have a little bit of a rest and then resume the work. So maybe it's got to do with people coming back to the office. I don't know.
Some other stats around this said that fewer women feel comfortable discussing their symptoms with their manager. That's a really tricky one because I know it sounds a bit sexist, but I would feel slightly uncomfortable discussing miscarriage with a male boss. I'd feel way more comfortable discussing it with a female boss.
100%. Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, if we're still seeing males in those high levels of responsibility in the workplace, I can understand how they would feel uncomfortable. But this was an increased stat in comparison to 2023. It had gone up by 4%. And we're seeing actually the flip if we look at the stats of the number of women in leadership positions. Obviously, it's marginally different. It's going up by a very small percentage every year. But we are seeing more women, particularly in middle management, than we are with men.
Well, keep in mind with the whole thing about women feeling uncomfortable in the workplace, speaking to men about miscarriage, it's not just the miscarriage per se. It's also the fact that they know that getting pregnant is on the radar. And also, what does that mean for them out of the business? Are they going to have medical appointments? Okay, well, I thought that they were going to get a promotion or maybe they were up for a role. That's kind of been taken off the board now because I know that you're actually trying to actively get pregnant. So for me, that was also another reason I didn't want to share that I had a miscarriage or that I had two miscarriages, was because I don't know what that next kind of like 12 months looks like. And I don't want to do myself a disservice by even letting them know that I'm trying to get pregnant. So it's a shame, but the disadvantage goes so much wider than the actual
incident per se. It's kind of like it sets the tone for the whole next 12 to 24 months of whether you're going to be in the business or whether you're not going to be in business and what that looks like, in what capacity. So if the men are going forward with who's getting the promotions because they are majority of that management team, then you don't want to, again, put yourself in a position where you might be overlooked. You know, it's kind of like all of your hard work can just go out in a gym, which is really, sad.
So yeah, I completely agree with that. I also think it's so sad that in this day and age, people aren't taking sick leave. You know, like one thing that is my bugbear, and I really hate myself for doing it, is like I was so proud previously of not taking sick leave. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it was like a thing that I held into myself. It made me so proud that I was one of those employees that didn't take sick leave. And then when I got made redundant, I had like so much sick leave. I thought to myself, far out, why was I slogging myself? I genuinely should have used that for when I had severe morning sickness. But when towards the end of my pregnancy, I felt exhausted. They're all valid reasons of why I could have taken it. And yet I was too proud to. And upon reflection, it makes me sound so ridiculous. I just bloody take
it. I know. But do you think it's maybe because like senior management or your team might have seen you as letting down the team or not fulfilling your role or, you know, disappointing people? Or it kind of plays into that whole good girl thing, you know? It's like, shut up, smile, sit down, speak when you're spoken to, you know, do the right thing. And it's like, it's not really serving us anymore. Take your sick if you're sick.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say I do want to get more into the stats next week on this report because it's so interesting. And I would give kudos to Deloitte on this because I love that when I'm reading a report, there actually are stats on menstruation and menopause. It's the first report I've actually read where a large organization has interviewed people on it. Like, kudos to them. Let's hope we see more of this stuff in the future. On a side note about Deloitte, Chrissy just mentioned the funniest story. I mean, you don't have to tell the full story, but please share with us a little bit of it because it's absolutely hilarious and it would never happen in this day and age. Never.
It happened not too long ago, in the last kind of like 10 years, but a friend of ours, we were living in London, and a friend of ours actually ended up losing her rental space, and she was actually working at Deloitte. So I can't ever think of Deloitte without thinking of this. And she didn't tell anyone because she was too embarrassed to tell us that she didn't have anywhere to stay, which is silly, but anyway. And she ended up actually living in the cloakroom. So at night she would finish work and then she would go and sleep in the cloakroom, which is terrible.
It's so horrible. But also it is hilarious because if you knew this person, it's so against who they are, as in they would. It's hilarious. It's so funny. Nice.
It is hilarious. The things you're doing, in your 20s.
Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly right. I don't think many people are doing that anymore, but I love it nonetheless. Supporting your loved one to breastfeed starts by valuing it as work. ABC lifestyle writer Kelly Scott wrote this article. And it starts off by saying, whenever Elizabeth Mansfield, what a regal and stately name, was breastfeeding and her husband was home, he kept busy. Very early on, he realized that when I was sitting down feeding, I was working, the 34-year-old mother from Brisbane says. If I was feeding, he was up and doing housework or things for the baby. Far out. Who is this husband? I'll take one. I don't really know how you would do the journey without that kind of support because it's a lot of work. It's around the clock. Amen, sister. Yes, it is. Unlike changing nappies, cooking meals, or staying on top of laundry, she says nobody could ever take over from the care and work of breastfeeding. Dr. Smith, who developed the Mother's Milk Tool to quantify the volume of breast milk and value of breastfeeding, says just by sitting still, a breastfeeding caregiver is creating more than $100 worth of milk a day. That is one hell of a start, I have to say. $100 a day? I would almost say more.
$100 a day. Well, then you think about like the actual hours that she's doing it. It starts between 8 and 12 hours. So
absolutely,
it's much more than $100. It's $100 milk, but more, a lot than $100 a day, that's for sure. If it was paid, you know?
Exactly. This article goes on to say, and I think this was the point of contention for me, and I want to break it down with you, K-Dog. Research shows the most common type of assistance for new mothers to enhance their nursing routines is verbal encouragement from their partners. Miss Marshall Cairns suggests partners and family can also play a gatekeeper role, keeping disturbances to a minimum, such as limiting visitors. Before I get into my full rant on why I completely disagree with this, what do you think?
To me, I don't know if it's the way that it's written. I know it's with good intent, but to me, it feels like the husband's at the door saying, everybody, you can't come in just yet. Sweetie's still feeding and she's doing great.
So yeah. I don't need your words of encouragement, Scott. I'd prefer you to absolutely start fucking doing shit.
I need words of encouragement, Scott, while you clean the bottles, do the dishes, do bedtime.
Exactly. It's acts of service.
Feed the dog. It's all of it. It's all of it. It's everything except for the actual breastfeeding itself. Like, yes. It's literally everything but the breastfeeding.
Yes. Out of curiosity, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think verbal encouragement is as opposed to all of the other things that could be done?
Honestly, I think it's a whole package. So the reason why I say this is because when I teach birth class, it really ties into this whole piece of actually predominantly men, but birth partners, knowing how a woman's body actually works, how our anatomy works, our physiology works, what that actually physically looks like, what it mentally looks like post-birth, and breastfeeding comes into this. So I think first it's like getting an understanding of what that actually looks like, and then it's how you can best support a feeding mother. So it's, yeah, I think words of affirmation is one piece, and I do think it's important because I think not enough people probably do give encouragement to their partners or say nice things, which could really long way, but it's one piece of the puzzle. It's a tiny little piece. There's so much you can do.
I think it's a small piece, because if Ryan was sitting on the couch having a nice glass of wine with his feet up while I'm sitting there breastfeeding, and he's like, you're doing a great job, doll, I'd be like, get your ass off that couch and start vacuuming. Like, your words are the lowest of low right now. And unless my house was like the Garden of Eden with like everything pristine and in its place, those words of affirmation would count for jack shit. So I appreciate this article, but I really, really hate that out of the whole article, the research that they chose to profile was that new mothers should have verbal encouragement from their partners. Like, no, Susan, or no, Miss Marshall.
Do you know what I think? This is
incorrect.
Do you know what I think? Good conversation around what is your love language? So for you, it would be gifts, right?
Oh,
so
yeah, I love a gift. Absolutely.
You know, like, a gift and clean the house. For me, like, words of affirmation and having someone physically feed me while I'm breastfeeding, or make me a cup of tea, or rub my feet, or something like that, that mean a lot to me. So I guess it comes down to the mother and what her love language is. So maybe that's the start of a conversation. Find out what mum's love language is and then do those things. And it's also about looking at like domestic duties and dividing them, because, yeah, especially at the start, it's like you cannot feed and do anything else. You are physically stuck there. And then if you're not feeding, you're probably pumping. And it's great to have things like wearables, you know, wearable pumps.
Yes.
So you can go and do all the things, but it's like just another thing to do. So it's like, great, I can pump and I can do the dishes, which is good because like you don't want to be stuck there. But also like, fuck, just let me sit down and watch Netflix and have a cup of tea and just like give me a minute to just recoup.
Yeah, exactly. The burden of breastfeeding and managing all of your other household tasks shouldn't just be carried by you. They need to be split. I mean, I'm not saying they need to be split evenly, but if you're sitting there taking the time to breastfeed and you can't physically walk around the house with the kid latched onto your nipple, or if you're bottle feeding, same goes, to be honest. Like, I tried so many times, as in the second time around with Zabe, I was far more comfortable with breastfeeding. So many times to like walk and breastfeed, and it was just a disaster. Like, I just felt so gross in myself. I had like half a tit popping out, then I've got like milk dribbling down. Like, you need to actually sit, not just for the comfort of it, for the practicality. It can be really hard. Bottle feeding's the same. So many occasions when I had like a bottle in Zave's mouth and I was like, oh, I'll just multitask at the same time, and I could see, I looked down at him, I'm like, oh, yeah, exactly, exactly. So, like, it is equally as frustrating that sometimes you do actually need to sit there and you can't do anything else. So those words of encouragement, again, great, like, one thing tick off, but the fact that this article really picked that as its pinnacle point, like, no, nah, sorry, can't agree with that. It's a hard no from me.
Do better.
Yeah, do better.
I wanted to kind of touch on, there's been a lot in community around domestic violence and women's rights, consent and body autonomy. And the birth space is unfortunately really no different. And it's really, really challenging. It's like another example of patriarchal systematic problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, schools, then you've got domestic violence in homes, then you've got the gender pay gap, and you've got a loss of income and a loss of super for women. And then you go into a hospital to have a baby, and then, you know, approximately one in three ends up with birth trauma, and one in 10 experience obstetric violence. Like,
oh my gosh, okay, hang on. We need to unpack that. Firstly, one in three did not know that. That's huge.
Yeah, it's 28%, so it's almost one in three.
Bloody hell. Yeah. And what was the obstetric violence? Oh my gosh, tell me. My ears have already pricked up around this. What is that?
One in 10 people will experience obstetric violence. So that is something where they have not given consent and something has happened to them in that birthing space or in the pregnancy space that's made them feel really unsafe and that they feel is traumatic. So it could be a variety of different things, but it all comes back down to not giving consent, not feeling safe, not having your rights respected, not being part of the conversation or having control of things, and then being left in a state that you have to then go and parent with. So if you experience birth trauma, you are likely to experience PTSD, flashbacks, issues with bonding, breastfeeding. And it's like, yeah, cool. Now I've got to go back into the workplace. Now I've got mental health issues.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a real flow-on effect. And especially for women that are now in a DV household, it's like I can't even begin to imagine trying to parent and trying to navigate motherhood with those additional pressures, you know.
Yeah.
I did suffer from perinatal anxiety and some depression, and that came down really from my first birth experience, which led me to made it so much harder just adding on that extra layer. When everyone's like, oh my gosh, is this the time of your life? Like, you know, you should be in this love bubble. And you're like, the shit that I'm seeing when I close my eyes isn't fun. And then you got to go back to work. And it's like, yeah, it's a lot. So that's what makes me really passionate about being in that birth space is like empowering women and empowering men. There is so much. Like, I love having birth partners in my class because most of the time, I want to say, I'm saying the dads / birth partners, generally the birth partner is going away with so many tools that they can actually do to help the mum. And it's so empowering. And it could be everything from like knowing about different tools, knowing about different breathing techniques, visualization, affirmations is one of them, because it is really nice when you feel really safe and feel really held when the person who you love the most is giving you that encouragement and keeping you feeling safe and feeling connected when you're birthing your baby. So
yeah,
it's all about learning about women's bodies. Like, there's so much like we don't know as women and also as men. Like, men know even less about women's bodies.
So tell me, okay, so for our little community section, I want to know what have men said off the back of a session of yours that has surprised you or given you a little giggle?
So what is a perineum? Do I have one? Yes, we all do. All human beings have a perineum. So it's kind of like going back to basics, you know. It's like, how are you supposed to know what an episiotomy is without actually knowing that you have a perineum? I did a birth class on the weekend and the dads were all so excited and engaged, and I love seeing it because usually they come into the class and they're like, what is this? Like, do I have to be here? They would probably rather be at golf or be doing anything. And then by the end of it, they are like excited and you just see their faces light up and they're like, I was really nervous. I was really scared. And coming out of that, like, I'm actually really excited for it. And it's also just really empowering for them, you know, knowing your choices in childbirth, knowing that you're stepping into a place where you're birthing your child. So you're taking a physiological event and you're putting it into a setting. It's like you are now going into a business where they've got a roster. Janet needs to have her tea break. You know, Susan's got to go home to her family. But your body doesn't work on that clock. So it's like, no wonder there's intentions because they're trying to get you out the door. So just knowing like how to ask the right questions, how to advocate for your partner, how to guide that conversation, how to show up for your partner. And men like things to do. So if they don't do birth class and they haven't had someone tell them, they don't know what they could be doing. I'm like, here is your list.
On that, yeah. This is a very good point, actually, Chrissy, because Ryan actually suffered from that on my birth with Xavier.
Oh, he
felt, he was like, what do I do here? Because I had an epidural and we were just kind of waiting. I got induced. And so instead of actually being productive or like, I don't know, taking a nice photo of me, or, you know, doing something like telling me I'm doing a great job and we're going to meet our baby soon, he decided to like create a playlist. It was the worst fucking playlist I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, right, it's okay. Like, I've already kind of got the vibe that I want with the time. And he's like, no, like, I'll create a good one. I shit you not. When I was like, oh, I think I need to go to the toilet now. They're like, oh, let us check. And they're like, no, it's time to push. The first song that came on was like AC/DC. Like, it was the worst song. And he was laughing. I'm like, turn this off. Like, I will cut you. I will end you right now. Like, what are you doing? It would have been so much more beneficial for him to have some tools in his toolbox that actually would have contributed to a more pleasant experience. Because in the moments before Zay was born, I had this like innate rage of the fucking songs that were playing. Like, this wasn't the birth that I was anticipating with this fucking playlist. What are you thinking, mate? You absolute nutter.
And so that's where I would come, you know. Well, hopefully if you go for round three, I'll be the parrot on his shoulder and I'll write him a list of things. But it's like there is so much like the birth partner can do, and they actually play a really integral role, like super important. There is no one in that room that the birthing mother feels more connected to at that time, that they are super vulnerable than the person who's there to support.
I felt pretty connected to my anaesthetist. Not anaesthetist, what was it? Is that the epidural person? I was connected, like a deep connection. Yeah. Like, I looked in the eye, give it to me.
But no, I don't doubt that they have a God complex purely based on the fact that women were just like, oh, thank God you're here.
Absolutely.
But, you know, epidurals aren't for everyone. There's nothing wrong with an epidural. If you want one, absolutely get it. But it's like, if you can't get it, like me in my first birth, after asking for it for 6 hours, it would be good to have some tools to pull upon that you can actually utilize that actually will give you results.
Yes.
Because you can tap into endorphins. Like, endorphins are 20 to 40 times more powerful than morphine. So if you know how to tap into your endorphins and actually access those things, then that is an amazing natural relaxant and like pain reliever. So yeah, it's all about learning about all of those tools that can help you and your birth partner. Yeah, it's a great course.
On that, tip of the week. Do you want to start first or do you want me to? Do you have a nice little, I mean, you've given quite a few tips. I didn't know that about endorphins. That's a good one. Any tips? Do you have any tips about return to work, career, motherhood? You can actually just give any good little hacks that you've got.
Do you know what? I think just for me personally, a tip would be realistic about what it looks like for you in workplace. I think, you know, something that when I went back to the memo that I found super helpful was just being honest. I was actually offered a different position and I really wanted it, but in reality, I knew that I didn't have the capability and scope to step into that position. So I spoke to them about what it would look like, how I could add value to the business without it being that specific position. And I ended up going into an education role and I'm so happy that I did. I actually ended up doing less time that they proposed that they wanted me to originally do. And, you know, I'd said to them, I feel like I want to do the right thing by the business and this is what I can commit to. And I know that this is where my strengths are going to lie. So I think being realistic is really, really important because you can always go up, but you can't always go down. It's much easier to say, hey, would you like me to do an extra day versus, hey, I need to take a day away. So I think be realistic about where you're going to come in. And then once you've settled in, see what you can layer on, if you can layer on anything additional, or if, you know, have a look at the company benefits and use the benefits, whether it be things like days or community service or things that are really going to make you feel like your cup is fulfilled in the place, utilize them. They have things already set up, looking to what that looks like and actually utilize the services or the benefits that you get. You'll be a much better person, worker, mother for doing those things when you actually have to go back to work.
Yeah, and that's a great tip. My tip this week is make your work visible. There are so many people I've met along the way that do so much work and so much good work, but no one ever sees it. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very much in the background. A lot of companies now have WIPs or stand-ups that they do, and that is a great opportunity in a smaller group for you to say, hey, I just wanted to let you know I've done this piece of work this week, really proud of it, and showcase it. If you're not comfortable showcasing it to a larger part of your business, at least showcase it to your team. On so many occasions, women don't do this and it sets them back. Like, people cannot read your mind and they cannot see what you're doing if it is not visible. Like, your manager may be able to, but other team members can't. The wider organization can't. Just make it visible to anybody. The right people usually are the best people, but anybody that you feel comfortable showing it to, if it's a smaller group and starting there, do it, because you will feel so much more appreciated, valued, and your other teammates or other members of the organization will have a greater insight into what you're doing and how impactful it can be.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think that's something that comes up all the time at work. You know, there's a lot of sharing of resources, sharing of work. And it's so handy because a lot of the time businesses will work in silos and you don't necessarily know what's going on in other departments. And then someone will come and say, oh, hey guys, by the way, I've done this work. And you're like, I am going to utilize that because that's great. And that's exactly. Actually just now saved me a lot of time. So, and I can just transfer it into a different kind of document, but the work's been done. So absolutely share it. Lovely. I think that wraps us up for this week.
It does. As always, if you have loved listening to Witching Hour, particularly with Chrissy today, please leave us a positive 5-star, a triple plus review. Follow us on readyornot.pod and tune in again next week. Hopefully Lou will be back on board. We'll chat to you then.
Thanks, guys.